Hey, peeps, please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the family. All right, so now that that's out of the way, let's get into this. What is going on, peeps? So, we just finished up an interview with John Kim over there at Litecoin. Have a live stream here with Elliot. We've been talking about doing this for quite a while. You know, we've seen each other at a bunch of different conferences and events, you know, over the past year or so. And he's always a lot of fun to hang out with and kind of talk shop with. So, we thought we would just kind of do this impromptu, you know, live stream and just kind of just chit chat about whatever. Take some questions from the live chat right here. We'll just kind of, you know, chat with ourselves as well. And so, Elliot, what is up, man? How you been?
I'm doing well, man. It's really good to see you. Obviously, we've been talking about this for quite some time, so it's always good to come and hang out with the Beatles fam, the Beatles crew. Beatles juice, Beatles juice, Beatles juice, and here you are. It's great, you know, being able to, you know, I think one of the extra blessings of being able to be an influencer in the space, beyond the fact that we love it and we, you know, we feel like we're helping out push the narrative of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency forward, is we get to meet other people at really cool places and do really cool things. Like we've shared a couple of memories over the past year or two that have been definitely highlights of my last few years. And so it's always cool to come and hang out, to do lives, and of course to reunite at these other cryptocurrency events, which is a really cool experience.
It's awesome, bro. Yeah, big time, man. It was a lot of fun to hang out with you. You know, I think we had, let's see, which one was the first one? That was where we did ping pong, right? So we played some ping pong, and that was Boosto, if I remember right, right?
So Boosto, that was the Litecoin Summit, yeah, correct. Yeah,
that was a lot of fun, man. So what's new with you, man? You got your own project. You're out there trying to build stuff. You know, kind of tell us about it.
Yeah, so I have a dApp that I've been building now for, you know, we've concepted it. The original concept started last year. We had a prior company that we did years ago, which was a live streaming, mobile live streaming company that we built, and we raised venture funding. We had a big team and, you know, ended up being too niche for the investors. And but we, you know, we learned a lot, built some great technology. And when we came into cryptocurrency, we were just so excited to see so many people building cool things. And it kind of felt like we were getting to play venture capitalist. Like, I'm going to go invest in this and I'm going to go invest in that. And then, you know, throughout 2018, you know, that hope kind of fizzled quite a bit. And all of a sudden, you know, the reality set in that a lot of people aren't doing all these wonderful things that they said they were going to do, and that the promises wouldn't really be kept the same way. And so, you know, we were thinking, how can we use our experience now to contribute, you know, because being a content creator, being an investor in the space, I think I could do more. And so my business partner and I set to put together our skill sets and dedicate it to building something that we think could bring new people into the space. That was really the only ethos of the project, is what could bring new people in. And, you know, we've built very commercial leaning projects before, communities, you know, YouTube communities with hundreds of millions of views. We've also built, you know, online communities, for example, in hip hop and other niche communities, over 30 million actives a month. And so we know how to build things and get them out to people and make them fun and good looking. And so the goal was to come up with something that could do that for crypto, you know. And the original thought was to make a chat sort of social media app. And I'm going to be doing a really deep dive in AMA with my community on Friday. So definitely stop by, as I'll go through more of the deeper, boring stuff on Friday. But yeah, essentially, we saw a lot of the chat apps kind of fail. We saw a lot of social media plays kind of fail from the time that we had concepted it to the time that we started going out and trying to actually put together the project. And so we ended up kind of saying, okay, you know, we're seeing voice.com spent $20 million on just the website. And I'm not, you know, I've personally not heard anyone talk about it. And so you're seeing a lot of, you know, struggles to get social plays to work in the crypto world, and even not in the crypto world. So I thought, you know, we kind of came together, we said, you know, what would really work, what we could get people using blockchain and crypto in a really seamless way, is a game. And so we have been building a video game now throughout 2019, and we're extremely excited about what we're going to come out with. We're sort of taking the gameplay from World of Warcraft and we're Fortnite-ifying it. So we're giving it this cool cartoony look, we're giving it a very simplified UI, and we're making it just super fun. The same sort of view that you get with Fortnite, really fun abilities and just great graphics. And we're building it in what we think of as the world's best video game engine, which is Unreal Engine. And so We couldn't be more excited about what's going on and really close to our V1 launch. And that's just, I've just been head down trying to work on that, which is why you don't see me out here making content too often. And the excitement is at an all-time high, and I just cannot wait to show people what we've been doing.
It's awesome, man. Yeah, I'm excited for you, dude. I mean, it's crazy how much money there is in gaming. It's like $160 billion a year. It's more than movies, right? They're actually spending more money in gaming than there are in movies. And then another thing that was crazy is 60% of that $160 billion is in like virtual skins, kind of like accessories for your games, right?
Correct.
It's pretty nutty, man. So you're definitely going after a large, a large segment of the population. If you can bring them into blockchain that way, dude, definitely tip my hat to you, dude. That's awesome.
Well, you think about it. What is blockchain great at? You have assets, digital assets, essentially. And so, where that's thriving is gaming. You don't have to tell them about digital assets. They know. They're spending 60% of that, whatever, the figure you just laid out, 60% of $160 billion. Yeah, that's a lot of money that people are already spending on digital assets without the blockchain integration, without the true ownership. And so we are approaching it as we think all products should, which is don't build and expect people to use it just because it's crypto and blockchain. Build something great and then make it cryptified and blockchainified, and start with the great product. And so, we had started trying to make a collectible, kind of like a 3D CryptoKitties. And then we kind of, as our minds evolved around the project, we said, we can't just do a collectible. This game has to rock. And if the game is fun and people love playing it, then all the rest of it falls into place.
Yeah.
It sometimes sounds a little too simple to say, just make the game fun. But, there's no fun dial that you can just turn, unfortunately. But we put all our minds and all of our energy into building a kick-ass game that just is going to be fun. It's going to be something that hopefully you don't have to explain to people. You just say, just play the thing. And that's going to be the goal. And hopefully with that approach, we can attract a gaming crowd. And they won't even need to know all the crypto blockchain technicalities. They'll just be playing the game, managing their assets. And then if they want to learn more, they want to learn more about trading and withdrawing and doing all that kind of stuff, they can learn that stuff. They don't have to.
It's awesome, man. Hopefully you will end up being the Angry Birds of blockchain games, right? So that would be that nice pivotal moment, right? So
I'd be a happy bird if that was the case.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, man. So on your channel, you mostly cover the news and things like that, right? So,
correct.
Here I mostly, I just kind of cover the projects that, the community asks me to. They'll say, hey, what do you think about this project? And it's something I've done for a couple of years for them for free. And, I've never taken a penny from any of the projects ever. And so what I like to do is normally find out more about the founders behind the projects, and bring that to the audience. And then on every video, give them $100 of Bitcoin Cash or, t-shirts and hats and stuff like that, just to kind of get them into crypto, right? Just because, right now it's kind of like an echo chamber, right? There's like 1% of us and we're all talking about crypto, but it's our own little bubble. So we're trying to get more and more people into blockchain, into crypto, to where they understand it and they start using it. Obviously, we need things kind of like what you said, where it's just going to be simple to use and they're not going to have to understand how blockchain works. So we're trying to find those projects together here on the channel. And so I just wanted to take a look over here and see in the chat what we got going on. Has anybody got any questions over here? This is just kind of an impromptu live stream. No agenda. We had no talking points. We just jumped on and just started chatting away, man. So
it seems like everybody's really concerned with the Craig Wright dump.
Satoshi?
Fake Toshi, yeah. So, I don't think a lot of people are here saying, oh, this is Satoshi. Maybe a few people. So I apologize to those people if that offends you. But, I think there's a lot of evidence that he's not Satoshi or at least the driving figure behind the Satoshi movement. He has a lot of coins. He has a lot of Bitcoin. And apparently...
How do we know? But see, that's one of the dilemmas I have, right? Is he says that he has a lot of coins. And every time he points to a wallet, it's been disproved, at least from what I've heard, that he owns it. It's like old Silk Road wallets, or it's, this or it's that. They can't actually prove that it's actually his, nor can they actually find any transaction he's ever made with a Bitcoin. And so when he's going to have to give, 50% of his money to the Kleinman, family, how much money is that really, right? They say like 1.1 billion or 1.1 million Bitcoin, if I remember right, from the numbers that are supposedly held in some tulip trust. But Have we actually confirmed that that's real? And I know that obviously this is just, it's coming to the end of this trial, it appears, but it appears the judge has discounted him and said that, he's not a credible witness or something along those lines, and that half of whatever income and IP that he has in Bitcoin is going to end up going, to the other party. So I think that, speaks kind of volumes, in the crypto community, as far as the 1% that actually pays attention to any of this stuff is, is he really Satoshi? Well, the judges don't think so, right? And I don't think anybody's ever been able to show that he's actually spent a Bitcoin ever, or has been able to show any of those wallets that he claims he owns, he actually owns. So I just wonder what's really going to come in at the end of this.
We're having some comments come in essentially addressing this, saying it's in a trust, and that the actual coins and private keys are in the trust. And so he doesn't have direct access, I guess, is what this logic is coming in from. The riddles. Sorry if I mispronounced that. Thanks for the comment as well. But just to go back to this, there's always a reason, right? Like you're saying, there's always a reason why the dog ate the homework with Craig S. Wright. And that's, I'm a big believer in what is, and I know that sounds stupid, but you just, as you go through this journey of building companies, employees, contractors, developers, you hear so many reasons why things don't get done. And so, all that really matters is what is done in the end. And it's not emotionally, right? You just have to stay level-headed and say, well, that's great, I understand. But what do we have to work with here? And I think you're right, from a pragmatic standpoint, it's hard to say what Craig Wright does or doesn't have. It's very, very hard to say. At this point, though, I think that
who cares? At this point, who cares, man? If he has all that Bitcoin, there's enough people out there that's going to buy it. Obviously, I don't think, that Craig Wright is Satoshi. I've said that from the beginning. I think he was part of the early people that were on the project of sorts. I think he obviously had, some part to play, but I don't think he was Satoshi. But, I've talked about this in the past, maybe for your audience, that I've done videos and things like that. We had a contest where I paid, I think, a couple $1,000 in Bitcoin Cash to whoever, wrote the best articles, proving or disproving who Craig Wright, is, or if he is, Satoshi, all that kind of stuff. But who really cares at this point? Bitcoin is what it is. Even if he was, the creator, does it really mean anything? It's not like he has control over it anymore, right? So we'll buy his Bitcoin, right? So who really cares at this point? But I still think it's interesting how, we still keep, hearing the community talk about it. And
So speaking of Satoshi, and yes, I agree. I think everyone's just worried about a big dump on the market, if he does. But I think they'll probably do OTC trades for that level of Bitcoin. You don't just market sell. A million Bitcoin. So
the slippage would be crazy. They'd lose so much money if they did that.
Yeah, it would be very damaging to their estate. But I think there's an irrational fear there of a dump. If you have some scammers that use like Plus Token scam in China and they're just trying to dump the Bitcoin, now that's going to cause a dump because they're just trying to get rid of it as fast as possible before they get blacklisted and frozen. But this kind of legal drama doesn't play out that way. Just to go back to what I was going to say, speaking of Satoshi, I noticed you give away Bitcoin Cash on your channel. You used to give away Ethereum. Can you talk a little bit about your decision to start going towards the Bitcoin Cash route? I know you've interviewed Roger a few times. I've had him on my channel. Tell me a little bit about your opinion of Bitcoin Cash.
Sure. So, it's one of those things that just works, right? I'm not saying it's the best cryptocurrency out there. But, it's got the founders, a lot of the founding people that helped create Bitcoin and make it, well-known, adopted, that basically made the Bitcoin we know today behind it. So that says, kind of volumes right there. And, if you were to send somebody a dollar of Bitcoin, it might cost you $3, $4, $5. If I send somebody a dollar of Bitcoin Cash, it costs me less than a penny. And it happens really, really fast. So it works. And I'm just, one of those guys that likes things that work. It's reliable, it's safe, it's secure, it's fast. And then as I got to know Roger more, he's an advisor to Monarch. He's an investor in Monarch. He's a friend. After I got to know him more, after I got to know more of, the actual real story behind everything, it was one of those things that just kind of made sense to support. And so I like Vitalik, I like Ethereum, but one of the things was the transaction fees, you know, they were higher. It took longer for, you know, the payments to go through. Their development community is very shut off, and being a developer myself and creating projects, I need to be able to, you know, work with the team that whose chain I'm using. I want to have some dialogue. And when you try to reach out to them, it's very difficult to get a response. It's very difficult to get any kind of, you know, feedback and things like that I found. And, that was kind of disheartening. And then with Bitcoin Cash, when you reach out to their devs, boom, instant messages back and forth. You know, they're there to help, super friendly. You got Vitalik saying that he's thinking about using Bitcoin Cash because their devs are so friendly. They got room on their blocks, you know, all kinds of stuff. So, you know, it works. They've got a good community. You know, they have, you know, I understand, like, there's some Bitcoin maximalists out there that say, oh, Beatles is a traitor. It's like, no, not at all. Bitcoin, you know, is my baby. Like 80% of my holdings is Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the reason why I got in 2011. I love Bitcoin, all right? But it's, let's face it, it's a store of value now. It sucks for cash. Where Bitcoin Cash works for cash, right? And people get upset. They're like, hey, how come Vera's using the name Bitcoin Cash? It's like, well, it's a fork of Bitcoin. Okay, and it's being used as cash. Cool. All right, so why does he own Bitcoin.com? Well, he was one of the pioneers behind Bitcoin. He owned the IP. And then when he got kicked out, you know, basically of Bitcoin of sorts, and, you know, just like one of the originals there, when they got, you know, kind of the disagreements ended up becoming hostile. If you read, like Satoshi's early letters back, in, you know, like on our Reddit and things like that, or our Bitcoin, you'll see where he actually talked about increasing the block size when the network could support it, when we had the infrastructure, when we had, you know, basically enough, you know, computing power in the world to start, you know, basically making these transactions faster and more secure. And we had more volume of transactions like we saw in December of 17 and 18. And you saw these crazy high fees. And Satoshi's the one that said he would raise the block size. And so people get all pissed off and they're saying, oh, why would you do that? It's like, freaking Satoshi said he would do it. And so when Vera and those guys, you know, actually Vera isn't the guy that created Bitcoin Cash. He just joined Bitcoin Cash because it became so hostile there at Bitcoin. You know, it created this kind of, like, I don't know, this fracture in the community, right? And it's a small community. And so, you know, I get a lot of hate for, you know, supporting Bitcoin Cash, but I support Bitcoin too. You know, it's just people forget where it came from. And so, you know, when Roger owned a lot of the IP and, you know, he just kind of converted from Bitcoin over to Bitcoin Cash. And then when you've got, Gavin Andreessen, he was the guy that Satoshi Nakamoto handed the keys over to Bitcoin. So Gavin Andreessen is the guy that Satoshi turned over Bitcoin to. So Bitcoin Core kicked him out of Bitcoin. Where did he go? He went to Bitcoin Cash, right? So, I mean, you see, when you start kind of really doing the homework and you start really looking into this and you don't just listen to the Tone Vase types out there and you start actually looking into things yourself, you're like, whoa, man, you know, this is actually kind of a legit project, man. They've got more adoption than, you know, than Bitcoin in different stores. You know, it works. It's fast, cheap, reliable. You got the evangelist that made Bitcoin, you know, what it is today, now working for Bitcoin Cash out there promoting it. And so, you know, for me, it wasn't that difficult of a decision to start using it. I like a lot of different cryptocurrencies. I like, you know, XLM, right? So, you know, Stellar, I think, is a solid crypto. You know, there's things like XRP out there that works, man. You know, it just works. People, again, right there, they're like, oh, centralized, decentralized. The company holds too much of it. You know what I mean? It's, you know, it's the banker's coin. It's funny, man, that people are so tribal, you know, in this community. But all I care about is stuff working and getting the masses into it so then we all can benefit from it. And while we still have all this tribalism, people, you know, calling people, you know, traitors or whatever, you know, we're not going to get there, you know, as this community. And something else is going to be the thing that actually ends up making it. Something that's, you know, super fast, cheap, reliable, works like Facebook. And guess what? It's not going to be decentralized. And the 1% that's, you know, this echo chamber that we have right now, they're not going to be the ones, you know, that are being listened to once the 99% come in or the 30% or whatever it is. So there's just a lot of stuff going on in the space, man, that I've seen over the past, you know, I don't know, 8-9 years. And it's disheartening. But I know that in the end, we're all going to succeed. We're all going to be using blockchain for all kinds of cool things that we have no idea that we're going to be using them for.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I want to piggyback on a few things you said there, which is you're a product guy. You know, you're a people's person. You get what the end user feels and experiences. And that's what you described with using why you don't mind using Bitcoin Cash. You're like, hey, look, I can send it. It's cheap. It's easy. Works. I like that. I also think that I've had these debates with my co-founder, Dave, who I believe you met up in San Francisco a year ago. And we constantly come back to the fact that in the end, the credit card or the sort of Apple Pay style integration where you can actually just spend your crypto everywhere instead of going, oh, hey, honey, they take crypto at the movie theater now. We can spend our Bitcoin. It's everywhere or it's nowhere, in my humble opinion. And so seeing the shipment of the Monarch cards, the Monaco cards, soon to be the Monarch cards. I'm just assuming here. I'm looking into a crystal ball. I'm guessing we can talk about whether you have plans for credit cards in the future. But yeah, I feel like that Coinbase card, that Monaco card, that Crypto.com, I guess, is what they're called now, the Crypto.com card. Those are the integrations that I see making it so, hey, guess what? You swipe your card, it takes your money, it's a debit, they do the Bitcoin transaction in the background, it doesn't matter. That to me is the only thing that makes crypto as good as your current system, because you don't have to worry about it. And yes, it's still an intermediary, it's a credit card, and maybe we'll move past that in the future or whatever when everyone has some version of Apple Pay or Samsung Pay or something like that. But yeah, I think that right now, to me, that makes it so that the transaction fees on Bitcoin, the transaction times on Bitcoin become almost irrelevant to the actual use of it like cash. And so I'm pretty excited because I think now, although I agree with what you said, I still think Bitcoin Cash integrating with 11 bajillion retailers doesn't make it the same as my Visa card. And until I can literally just swipe anywhere, knowing that I go into that mom and pop corner store to get whatever I need to get and they have a little credit card reader and I can spend, I think that's the integration that's going to actually bridge the gap where people feel like they can hold their money in crypto and spend it like they would their cash. Obviously, that's very few people that want to do that. But
sure.
With that world, would you still, in that world of credit card integrations where you're not actually waiting on a 10-minute, 15, 20-minute block time for Bitcoin, do you still see a room for Bitcoin Cash? Do you still see the niche for Bitcoin Cash developing? I'm curious. And I'm not anti-Bitcoin Cash. I hope that didn't come across as super anti. I just personally see that credit card integration potentially making that cash argument a little less fluid, not even having anything to do with this sidechain layer 2 Lightning integration, which is still coming, you know?
Yeah, that you got to be a rocket scientist and you got to be Satoshi to figure out how to set up. Yeah, but so here's one of the things that I kind of deviate with Roger on. There's a lot of things, but one of my arguments I have, you know, just like I do to Roger's face, that you need stable tokens and stable coins for people to spend crypto, because right now you have nothing but people that are holding onto their crypto because they think it's going to moon or they're trying to recover losses. And merchants don't want volatility, right? They need to know that if they're paid $5 for whatever, they're going to get $5 for whatever, right? So I think stable tokens and stable coins is how we start to get the adoption. That's one of the cool things about Bitcoin Cash is they created something called Simple Ledger Protocol. And so SLP. So they'll have stable tokens and stable coins. As far as Bitcoin Cash being the digital cash to take over the world, I don't think that's going to happen, because I don't think people are going to want to spend it, right? I think that a stable token or stable coin is going to be what brings the masses into crypto. When they don't have to understand how blockchain works, they're spending a digital representation of a dollar to them for goods and services. I think that's what's going to do it. So like when we created Monarch Pay, so if you're a merchant, you know, say you have some kind of, you know, reoccurring service that you send to people, or maybe a t-shirt of the month club, or your Netflix, and you're bringing people in, you know, to pay $9 a month for Netflix services, or you're a mortgage company, or whatever the reoccurring service is. You know, we created Monarch Pay, so that way a merchant, through decentralized reoccurring payments, you know, it's a mouthful, so we call it, you know, Monarch Pay. But through decentralized recurring payments, they can actually accept stable cryptocurrencies for their subscription services. So any merchant, just with a few clicks, can go to Monarch Pay and start accepting cryptocurrency, stable tokens, for their goods and services. So now they don't have those big credit card chargebacks. Now they don't have to pay all the interest. You know, like, you know, when you're paying 3-7%, you know, fees for using your credit card, you know, for a merchant, they got to pay that 3-7%. Or, you know, if you're a YouTuber and you've got to do Patreon, right, and you're taking 10% for that kind of for those kinds of transactions, all that's gone now. With Monarch Pay, you know, it's like 1%, something like that. It's decentralized. You're in charge of your fund. There's nobody in the middle of it. You don't have to worry about chargebacks and high fees, and it's using stable coins. So I think
don't you think that the merchants should offer discounts for using a system like that, where they know that they're not risking chargebacks, that they're actually, when does the supply side discount come in? Because there's clearly an advantage, right? You don't have chargebacks. You have complete reliability, no intermediaries, no fees. At what point do we see the merchant say, you know what, we'll give you a little discount if you go this way, 10%, 5%, 15%, whatever it is. Because to me, that's a big adoption, you know, that will help ignite the adoption cycle, because it should be cheaper. Right? If it's better for the merchant and in the end they're making more money, keeping more money, you'd think there would be, they could figure that into the price. And to me, that should be the next wave, which is, hey, do Monarch Pay, guess what? We don't get any chargebacks. We don't get any fees. We don't get any intermediaries. So, I mean, I guess there's sort of an intermediary, but I mean, at any rate, I think there should be a supply side discount. Have you seen any interest in that from the merchants that you talked to?
Yeah, but there is no intermediary. So it's basically a smart contract with atomic swaps. So we're not in the middle of anything. We don't have their private key. We don't have their seed. We don't have their funds. We don't have their data, any of that kind of stuff. You know, use it today. It's today. So with the merchants, they have the ability to do that. But not every merchant wants to do that. You know, like say your purse.io, you know, they give like 10 to 30% discounts, you know, using crypto, you know, on purse.io for, you know, like Amazon purchases, things like that. So that's up to the actual, you know, merchant to do. I agree with you, though. I think that to get people into crypto, if it's going to be a hassle for them, there has to be some kind of reward, some kind of payoff, right? Why else would they do it? It's more work, right? So it's great for the merchant, but now there's another hurdle, right? There's something in the way for the user they've got to do to be able to start, you know, using their crypto or getting into crypto to use it on this, you know, on this site or whatnot. But I figure, you know, the first place to start is with the existing crypto community. Have, you know, people that are already accepting crypto or want to accept crypto and they can't, now they can. Then we make it stupid simple for people that are outside of crypto to start using it. So like within the next couple of weeks, it'll be on the Monarch wallet as well. So that way they can just start signing transactions, and it's going to make it, you know, just so much easier for people. Because right now it's for PC and Macintosh, you know, desktops, and they have to use MetaMask, you know, to sign transactions. So it's a little bit of a learning curve for people outside of crypto. But, you know, I digressed a lot there.
So what's the next phase for Monarch? You know, you've built an amazing wallet. You've built amazing services for merchants. You've built, you know, lending. You know, you can lend within the platform, right? And you can get interest.
Yeah.
So what's the next phase? You know, what do you see as something that could unlock another group of users for the Monarch community?
Gotcha. So what Monarch Wallet is, it's not really a wallet just for like cryptocurrencies. That's just the foundation, the bedrock, so to speak, right? From there, we build up. So it'll plug in the best companies and best services in cryptocurrency through one login. So now, like we've already done it with like Celsius and a bunch of other people, right? To where you don't need to go over to Celsius. You don't need to sign up for their services, KYC with them, create a login, all that kind of stuff. You do it right through Monarch. So you create a login there, and now you're accessing Celsius services through Monarch itself. So through all these different services and companies that we'll be plugging in, now through one KYC and one login, people will have access to all of them. And when I say KYC, there's certain services that require a KYC or AML. Like if you join up at like Coinbase or Binance or Kraken or Celsius or whatever, you got to fill out this paperwork and you got to do it.
Fiat on ramps.
Yeah. Anytime you want to touch fiat, you basically have to do it. And so it gets to be a real pain in the butt for the users, right? They're going to have to sign up there, fill out all the same paperwork, do it again and again and again. But through Monarch, they do it one time and then they'll have one login to these companies, to these services we partner with. And if they elect, they'll be able to send their data to these people. So that way they only have to do one KYC one time. And so it's, you know, it's a pretty incredible thing to imagine all the best services in crypto, all the best services in blockchain that we partner with, you'll be able to access through one app. So if you want to play your video game, you'd be able to play your video game right through frickin' Monarch. The login Amazing. Would come in right through Monarch. So all your data, your skins, everything that you got, everything that Elliot created, you'd be able to access through Monarch.
So I was reading a lot about, you know, interesting interoperability article that I sent you this morning, which it's very long. So I don't fault you if you didn't get a chance to read it. But essentially it was about the differences between working on, you know, a chain like EOS and a chain like Ethereum. Now you actually have plugged in to many different chains, many different wallets. How many chains are you integrated with right now?
Right now we support over like 3,000 different cryptos, but as far as chains, you know, we are definitely blockchain agnostic. We may have smart contracts on Ethereum and things like that, but yeah, we've plugged into like NEO. We plugged into like Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, GoChain, XOM, XRP. I think we've got a ton more coming, you know, a bunch of stable coins and tokens, things like that. But yeah, we're definitely, you know, blockchain agnostic because we don't want to just focus on one.
What's your experience in working and plugging into those different chains? Are they, from a wallet perspective, is one much more complicated than the other? Have you found that certainly, obviously, the Ethereums with the community and the documentation around it become a lot easier than, you know, the other more niche chains?
Yeah, dude, some are super complicated, right? You take things like Digibyte. They got like five different, you know, algos in there. Yeah, dude. It's insane. It's awesome. It's incredible technology. You know, yeah. I love Josiah and those guys. So, I mean, and then you look at Bitcoin. It's, you know, it's pretty, you know, simple, right? You look at Ethereum. You know, it's pretty simple, you know, generating keys. And so with like Monarch, you know, we actually generate the keys decentralized within the wallet itself in the phone. It's not transmitting, you know, data back and forth through nodes like a lot of other wallets do. So, you know, we've had to have, you know, really good discussions with a lot of the tech teams. Another one that we're working with, you know, a lot is Cardano, because they've got stuff in Liquid Haskell and then a bunch of other stuff that they're doing there. So there's different complexities with different chains. They take a lot of time because we run nodes for every single chain that we support. So, yeah, definitely a lot goes into it, and they are not all created equal. Even if you go on CoinMarketCap and you look at all the different coins and tokens there, you'll see that 90-95% of them are just forks or replicas of Ethereum or Bitcoin, and a lot of people don't know that. So those aren't that difficult for the most part, but when you start getting into some of the newer tech, some of the privacy things, it definitely gets a little bit more involved for sure.
What do you think about these sort of flip-floppers on Bitcoin in the mainstream, to shift topics a little bit here?
Sure.
What do you think about these noteworthy figures in, you know, thought leaders, if you will? I did a video last week about essentially Kevin O'Leary, Bill Gates, and Mark Cuban all having said extremely positive things about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, you know, spanning 2013 to 17, and now kind of universally opposed to Bitcoin and calling it a terrible, terrible investment, a useless, you know, whatever the terms they're going to say. What do you think about that? You know, is there a conspiracy going on here? Like, is there the feeling that they don't want you to know the truth, or have they just genuinely pivoted?
Well, I think for some, you know, there's going to be just ignorance. And then for some, there's going to be ulterior motives. So if you look at people like Jamie Dimon, all right, so Jamie Dimon, he's out there telling people that Bitcoin is complete garbage, right? He's saying that, you know, it's worthless, it's, you know, it's crap, all this stuff. Secretly, we're told, he's got his traders buying up as much as they possibly can. Yep. So he's like single-handedly, you know, pushing the price down so he can benefit on the other side, buying it at a cheaper rate. From what I've heard and from what I've read, I can't prove it, but that's what we've heard, right? So you got people that do things like that, supposedly. And then you have other people that are just kind of ignorant and they just follow the press themselves. And so those people, you know, they just, whatever the news is saying that day, they just parrot, right? They don't have any original thoughts of their own. And then there's other people that maybe they bought in at 2017, maybe around, you know, November, December, and then they saw it tank to 3. And now they're just pissed off. Now they're just like, this stuff is garbage. So I think, you know, there's kind of a plethora, a spectrum, so to speak, of all these different people out there that with their own thoughts. And then there's like what you said, is there a possible conspiracy, right? Is there people out there purposely trying to, you know, drive the price down for ulterior motives? Maybe they have their own project. Maybe they want to buy it cheaper and sell it higher, whatever. I think every one of them is just, you know, kind of different. Like if you look at, what's dude's name? You know, he's with Overstock, not Bird. What's his name? Overstock.com. Burn, you know, so Burn, right? Like he was talking, you know, in the beginning, this was, I want to say it was like 15, 16, something like that, you know, how he was, you know, kind of, you know, against cryptocurrency, so to speak. And then, you know, he started talking more about Bitcoin, then he started accepting Bitcoin. And then, you know, he said he doesn't really like any other crypto projects for the most part, other than Ravencoin, right? He says it's like 100 times better than Raven or than Bitcoin. So there again, you see like, you know, ulterior motives, right? Because he has like his own project that they put like millions of dollars in, and they're out there, you know, trying to, you know, pump the price up, stuff like that. So again, yeah. Ulterior motives, conspiracies, there's a lot of it. Then there's just ignorance, and there's people that just, you know, literally got burned, right? And then there's people that are just outright there, just outright trying to manipulate the market so they can benefit on the other side.
Yeah, I think it's tricky, you know, and especially in this market where in reality, you know, you have store value argument for Bitcoin, you have a supply and demand curve that I think will continue to evolve in the right direction, which is why I think it's a good investment, is because I believe the demand will continue to grow. And then you have things like Ethereum, where I love Ethereum. I actually love all the technology. I love all the dApp platforms because I'm a dApp developer. I love to see that space evolve. But is there really a reason why utility tokens should continue to go up in value? Is there an argument why those tokens should constantly go up in value like Bitcoin? And I think you can make the case in both directions. And so, you know, to me, it's an interesting world out there, but I like to focus on the products that are really just keeping it simple, like you said, and trying to just build things that people use. And, you know, take it down a level and just focus on, don't focus on building a new, you know, water, electrical grid, a new water and plumbing system just for a whole city. Just build a coffee shop and make it popular. Build a taco stand, you know, and get people coming back for those tacos, you know, like build something that people want and something that people need. And I think that hopefully, you know, with the monarchs and the good actors in the space, we can see a little more of that. But yeah, it's so weird to see some thought leaders saying, yeah, it's garbage, but buy my coin. And it's really sad. But at the same time, you know, it's hard to believe that these very techie, very very high level thinkers have just decided to abandon Bitcoin now, with it having more development, more action, more activity, more regulatory support, more regulatory clarity, more institutional support, access. And I think that probably leads us into a nice conversation about FACT. It's coming right up, and there's a lot of hype.
Is that September 23rd, if I remember right? Is it September 23rd?
September 23rd, yes. A date that will be enshrined in crypto's history forever, for the good or for the bad. I know that there will be some pressure on the supply for Bitcoin. There will be some pressure on the demand for Bitcoin from FACT. But is this really the way that all the institutions in the world are going to start dipping their toe? What do you think of BACT? Do you think it's overhyped? Do you think this is really the key that will unlock the institutional, you know, pocketbook here, that will get trillions flooding into crypto through BACT? I love BACT. I think it's bullish. But do I think that this is going to set things off to 50,000 to 100,000? I don't know. I'm sort of cautiously optimistic is the way I'd put it. And I'm curious what you think about BACT, knowing a little bit more about the sort of more nuts and bolts side of managing and trading.
So I guess when you look at things, if you go back to, I guess, 17, right, when you had the CME, CBOE, when they came in, we got the highest prices we've ever seen. Do I think it's going to replicate that with BACT? Probably not. But I do think this is a nice, it's a nice entry for the institutions, right? You're going to see them start dipping their toes, like you said. A lot of people feel that the price of Bitcoin currently has backed in it, or baked in it, backed in it, whatever you want to call it. They're saying that, you know, it's basically baked in, right? So with that being said, all it takes is one big institution to just say, you know what, let's just allocate 1%, you know, of our holdings here. Let's allocate 1% of it into Bitcoin here. Let's use BACT. And then what that'll do for the market cap is insane, right? I mean, what that'll do for the price of Bitcoin is insane. Do I think that's going to happen September 23rd? Probably not. But do I think that it's going to be, you know, it's the starting point? I think there's going to be a lot of people, a lot of big institutions watching it. They're going to look and see what the volume is. They're going to look and see what the, you know, kind of, I guess, what the adoption is. Who all's, you know, kind of dipping their toes. And then you, all it takes is that first guy. And you'll see, man, it, with these big corporations, they're all afraid of missing out. They all FOMO too. Every single one of them. They're afraid of becoming dinosaurs, of becoming Kodak. You know, they're afraid of that. And so when somebody big starts doing something, then they all start doing something. That's why when they were all talking crap on blockchain, you see all these central banks that all have their own blockchain that they're doing now, right? Their own coins that they're doing. You see like Bank of America, they got a ton of patents. They were out talking all kinds of trash, right? But yet they got all these blockchain patents. You know, you see the Walmarts, the Alibabas, the Amazons, all these cats. They're all coming in. And then same thing with like Fidelity, right? So in Fidelity, imagine if they, you know, allocate 1% of the trillions of dollars that they hold, you know, into Bitcoin. They just say that, hey, you know what? This is the safest. This is the most secure. This thing, you know, here has been around the longest. Let's just try for some of our investors here in Bitcoin. Let's allocate 1% of our fund. It's going to be nuts. That day will come. That day will come. I truly believe it will. But I don't think it's September 23rd.
Agreed. I saw an interesting piece of news, which was brought to me by Brock Pierce, who I tend to keep an eye on what he says, because he actually has an interesting perspective into what the funds are doing. And he talked about how Cambridge Associates, not to be confused with Cambridge Analytica, which is essentially the gold standard for how wealth managers, pension fund managers, the biggest money managers in the world, the people who are managing, you know, ungodly amounts of money, you know, the hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars, the big funds, how they should be exposing themselves to cryptocurrency. And apparently they came out with a statement saying it is sort of really the standard now to have a 1% exposure. And so if, you know, you think of that as a several trillion dollar pools of funds that would now potentially see over the next few years or the next few months, hopefully months, who knows, probably closer to years, starting to get into that 1% or round up to that 1% number, you'd imagine there's a lot of capital that's trying to figure its way into the market. But is futures really the way they're going to do it? I mean, is that the way that they're going to expose themselves to the asset? Are they going to buy it on spot? Are they going to hold it? What is the way that is the institutional horde is really going to expose themselves to Bitcoin? Probably likely mostly Bitcoin, but you know, to cryptocurrency in general. Are they going to go to Coinbase? I think Coinbase is being very successful in their institutional custodial services. So it's just an interesting question. I think you're absolutely right. I think September 23rd is not the moment. But as we start approaching the halving, as we start approaching these interesting moments in Bitcoin history, sitting here already retracing 50%, you know, 70% of our lows back towards an all-time high, I think we set a really interesting place. Obviously vulnerable. It starts to remind me of November, where we're at right now, with us kind of slapping this 10K number over and over again, breaking it slightly, then getting above it. And you know, it feels like the dagger is just right there, ready to go in into all of our hearts, kind of. And even if that does happen, you know, obviously, if you have funds to deploy, as I do, I'm ready to scoop up those 7K Bitcoins, those 6.5K Bitcoins with some gusto. But of course, if we're ready to take off, I'd love that too. It's kind of an interesting moment. But you could see the FOMO there for the institutions would be tremendous, right? If knowing that the gold standard of institutional investment advice has just said, you need 1%. Knowing that now everyone's going to start doing it. The guy to your left, the guy to your right is going to start doing it. When do you do it? And so I think that there's a real case for that. This next move could be extremely, extremely explosive, you know, really explosive.
The first big guy that comes in that does that, it's going to drive up the price of things, in my opinion. And again, this is never financial advice ever. But when they see what happens, you're going to see a train of people doing it too. You know, you just need that kind of that first guy, right? The first guy to say, okay, I'm here. Let's play. Let's get our toes a little wet. And then he sees basically sees what happens, right? Everybody else sees what happens. If it's even remotely good, they're all going to come in because they know where it's going to go after that. So, you know, it's exciting times for sure for people that, you know, are into the speculation side of things for Bitcoin. It's definitely an exciting time. I don't think we've seen the top. I think it's going to be pretty incredible where we end up, but I don't know that it's going to be, you know, the $1 million everybody says. I don't know that it's going to go that high,
But what's the Beatles price prediction? The all-time moon.
You know, I think it's gonna. You know, I mean, if I had to put a number, I'd say 40,000 to 60,000. You know, that's, you know, a lot of people, you know, they think millions, and there's math that justifies any which way, right? You could say, well, the scarcity, you know, if you get 1% of the gross, you know, domestic product, you get 1% of like $86 trillion or $88 trillion coming in, it's going to rise up the market cap. You got $3 million Bitcoin. There's so many things that, you know, the math works any way you want to do it. But, you know, it's just, it seems like a safe, it seems safe to me compared to what a lot of other people are saying. So that was just based off some math that I did on the back of a napkin one time. So I figured to be somewhere around 40 to 60K, somewhere around there. But
sounds science-y.
Yeah. Awesome. We sure appreciate our fam. We love everybody that keeps coming back. You know, basically, we just cover the projects they ask us to, and then we try to get people into crypto.
Amazing stuff. You do so much for the community. It's so great to come on and talk to you and get the updates. I'm really excited to see where the Monarch project goes. Certainly, we'll always be in the chat watching, catching these great interviews. Make sure you guys follow Beatles. He's got some of the best interviews in the space. And absolutely, just been a pleasure just chatting and catching up, one developer to another.
Likewise, my brother. It is always fun to hang with you, and I look forward to the next time. So I'm not sure when that'll be, but, you know, we got the Asia trip. I know you can't make that, but maybe on the next one, man. We'll get together and do some fun stuff.
Hopefully soon after the launch of the game, I'd be super happy to hop on one of those. But for now, it's head down and grindstone.
Love it. All right. Cool, man. Well, I'll let you get back to the grindstone. So I got to do the same.
Thanks, everybody, for hopping in the chat. Fud Nation, I love you. I'll be back on. We have some really fun video coming up for you next. You'll definitely have to check it out yourself. But thank you so much for coming out. I hope you guys have a wonderful day. And thanks again to Robert Beatles.
Cool. Love you, peeps. God bless. Hey peeps, just a friendly reminder, Crypto Beatles shows are never financial advice, recommendations, or trading strategies. The views expressed here are solely that of Robert Beatles and his guests. Robert Beatles is the co-founder of the Monarch Wallet, host of TradingView Sessions, Crypto Beatles on YouTube, and owns several entities. Robert's opinions here do not reflect that of those entities. Some information shared here may not actually be factual. These shows are for information and entertainment purposes only. Never invest a single Satoshi or penny in anything without first seeking the counsel and advice of a professional financial advisor. Robert Beatles is not a financial expert or advisor. Investing in anything is super dangerous. You can lose all of your money, so always trade at your own risk. Please help us grow the family. Give us a comment and review on the Apple or Google Play Store. It's super quick and easy. Just scroll down, click the little stars, comment, and just help us grow the fam. All right. God bless you. Love you. Till the next one. Talk to you soon.